Welcome to another episode of Settle Down into Society. My name is Joel Carpen, and I am joined by my friend Santo Palomara for this episode number 8, 9, 7. I will go back and I'll actually check, but I have a feeling it's about 7, 8, or 9 of absolutely riveting news and social analysis. How have you been, my dear friend Santo?
Good afternoon, Joel Carpen. Lovely to see your happy face. I'm fantastic. Yourself, young man.
Very well. I'm good. I literally just walked in the door. All good.
Good. Well, I'm glad you could join us because we've had a fair bit of a reshuffle. We've had a few conversations regarding what's happening with the pod.
Yes, sir. We have. And it's... Go on.
Yeah,
sorry about that. I'm trying to do two things at once. Yes, we have, and it's coming along. It's coming along. I wouldn't say leaps and bounds, but it's working.
It
with
is
your wonderful help.
It is. Yes, it is. Look, from my end, as you know, I'm in a sort of state of transition, I suppose, in life. There's a lot of stuff going on. So when I first started out, I didn't realize how invested I would become in this, which is fine. But not only that, not only invested, but how much I'm enjoying it. The whole process, learning, editing. It's like football training, really, isn't it? You do a lot of the training, all the background stuff, and you really look forward to game day. And this little hour or so of our life is our equivalent of game day. Now's game
day. It is, and it definitely is. And you are definitely doing most of the groundwork at the moment, especially with what you're doing. But we've covered all that. Yeah, we understand. Like I keep saying to you, I thank you for it. You last time said you were, we'll just quickly touch on this. You sent me a text the other day in regards of your, and I said to you, you were going to do, we'll touch on this briefly, your CV joints. And I said, let someone else do it. And you, because you're stubborn and you went ahead and did it yourself. How did that go, young man?
The CV joints.
I've got written down here CV joints, and then with an ugly face because I knew it would probably. I haven't heard back. How did you go with that, sir?
Yeah, I did it. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, I've got an engineering background, I'm actually going to defend myself here. I don't think it is stubbornness. I think that is a willingness to an openness to educate myself, okay? And there is a bit of method behind my madness because, yes, it is a big job. It is a big job. There's a lot of shit you have to take off. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. There's specialized tooling that you need. And the part itself was nearly $700 from Toyota. But I figured that since I go out into the bush by myself so often that if I ever had to change a CV joint for whatever reason, I would have the knowledge of how to do it or at least a fair idea. Now, what I didn't expect was the level of involvement, difficulty, and the fact that it's not a one-person job, which kind of defeats the purpose of the whole thing in itself. In the end, I actually had to get a guy from around the corner who I know quite well to come and help me get the actual CV out, which
okay,
he was nice enough to do and invest a bit of time. We both damaged ourselves. I've got quite a... it doesn't actually look that bad on the screen, but I'm telling you right now, I can see meat in that cut on my hand.
Well, you've got big meaty hands.
I do. I've got big. So, look, just on that, unless you are a qualified mechanic
yes.
or you have an engineering background, do not try and change your CV joints unless you are prepared to hurt yourself, get frustrated, and have your car off the road for multiple days. And also, I fuck the tie rod ends.
Yeah, to get replaced that. I've got a theory, and I'm going to make. I reckon we should make T-shirts up, and I'll talk to you about that later. I have my favourite saying, like you, I'll have a crack at, so I've got no problem, and then I know my limitations. I have a saying that I use all the time: call the guy.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, and
there's
look,
certain things I'll do in this. It's just because it could turn into a shit fight. But anyhow. I digress.
I absolutely agree. Now, Santo, I know I don't mean to distract the train of this podcast, but I know that you've stuffed around with cars a fair bit. Now,
yes.
It was more to do with the body rather than the mechanical side of things. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was a qualified spray painter
back
in automotive college.
Well, I would just like to say that you guys have such a specialized skill that is under-recognized because it is an extremely hard thing to do. And the results that you guys get is absolutely incredible. So I don't know. Do you spray paint things still?
I still do on a small scale when I've got time. I transfer those skills if I'm doing, I like antiques and things, and I transfer those skills onto other objects, and there's what they call a crossover. I can do it. I haven't painted a car or done a panel, but if as soon as I touch a panel or do anything, it sort of slowly comes back to me. The biggest thing out of spray painting in general, or just quickly, is preparation. Anyone will tell you that, but if you to do a really good job, if you've got a car that you're going to keep, you are looking a minimum, and I say minimum, of between probably 30 grand onwards.
Yeah.
To do a complete respray. That is from the ground up. That's to do it properly. That's
to me, that's cheap. That's cheap. And you know what you say about the prep?
Yeah.
I learned about structures. So I'm an aircraft engineer. I learned all about structures. We're like a mechanical trade, but we had to know about everything, corrosion and blah, 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 you know. And part of the module was spray painting just bodies and just in general, right? And we were always told, once again, like everything, the preparation is vital because the actual finished job will look good for a couple of years, but if you haven't prepared it properly and it doesn't adhere to the body, you're fucked. It's going to start bubbling, pull up,
yes.
Rust. And once you get that rust under paint, you can't see it. You rub it back one day and it'll be completely out of control.
Do it once and do it properly. Sorry, I didn't interrupt. Did you want to ask me something on that, or you were just...
No. I was just complimenting you on your trade and how much of a specialized and underrated skill it actually is, because I've tried to paint a couple of things and, with an aeroplane, it doesn't really matter. You sort of, it looks okay. They'll do it later on. But when I've tried to paint things, I find that it's a messy job. And I don't have the skills to be able to get the finish that I want. But anyway, look, that's what I've been doing. Thank you for the question about the CV joints. It sucked. The left-hand side needs doing. I won't be doing it unless I've got someone there to help me for sure. I don't want to have any, don't want to inconvenience anyone with call-ins. If you are a qualified mechanic and you do have a few spare hours, get in contact with me at joelcarpin@gmail.com. Let's move on, Santo. So you messaged me with a few topics that you would like to talk about this week.
Yes, I was. Now, this might not have, this won't affect you yet, but it will. And I'll get on to what I'm alluding to. You young man, you're looking at buying another property at the moment, correct? We touched on that briefly. Yeah, you're looking at buying. So your other property you're living in at the moment, you're selling or keeping?
Keeping.
Okay. So what will happen with that? You'll have to pay land tax.
with the one that you're in at the moment when you move into your other place. Now, our beautiful, illustrious leader we had during COVID, Mr. Tongue-in-Cheek Teflon Dan of Victoria.
Yeah, who
apart
I was a
from
fan
some of.
Of
the things that you, that's okay. Well, hey, that's you're entitled to your opinion, and good luck to you, mate. If you thought he was that good, the worst lockdown in the worst lockdown city in the world, Victoria was.
Yep.
And he's left us in a crap load of debt that whoever's having children today, their children's children, I think, will be paying this debt off. So what he's done, so anyone who's building any new homes from this year onwards, we can't have gas, everything's electric. On top of that, I think the threshold was over 200. I think if your land was over 250,000, you had to pay a certain amount of land tax. So between him and Tim Palace,
there's probably not a block of land in the whole state of Victoria for under 250 grand either. It's like saying if you buy a block of land under 10 grand, you know,
it gets better, Mr. Joel Carpen. So before he left, he dropped the threshold to he dropped the threshold to 100. I think it's 150,000 by memory. So at the end of the day, I got a bill this year of last year's bill was 2,600 or something like that for the other property, the other two places I've got. So this year I got stung knocking on the door of $7,000.
So that is that's to have two investment properties.
Yeah, the land tax. So he's dropped the threshold to any block or any the land value of over 100. Instead of 250, he's dropped it to 150,000. So he blew the net out even wider. So everyone's getting ripped. But I've spoke to my cousin Santo, who you haven't met yet, down at St. Leonard's. He's got a couple of factories and things. And he's a hard worker. We've all worked hard. He got a bill for $33,600.
So on top of that $3,500, you have to pay your council rates as well?
Oh, no, this is separate. This is land tax, my friend. This is pure land tax.
Yeah, but what I'm so trying to work out rate. Is if you've got an investment property and you have to pay land tax, yes. I'm trying to work out
yes.
if you're paying $3,500 annually, like what is it costing you overall to have, you know, the investment properties? Because I think
you've got land tax, you've got insurances, land tax, insurances, rates. There's another nearly $2,000. On top of that, you've got every 2 years you've got to do now, which I agree, which is a good thing. You've got to get I've got the name where you have people come in, they do testing of your gas, water services, and make sure the place is up to scratch for renting. And there's another $700. And then during the year, whatever else you got involved in it. But it is.
But all these things, because they're investment properties, are tax deductible, aren't they?
Yes, they are, to a certain point. But then you've got to remember on top of what your annual salary is, and all that sort of business comes into it. So it's, I may sound like I'm complaining about it, and I guess I am to a point, but it's more that there seems to be, they don't go after the poor, they don't go after the rich. For some reason, people think that these people in the middle, they call them the investors, and that's why people are getting out of investing because of it's costing so much. So I think their theory is if they push people like myself and others with these high rates that they will get their houses to sell and they'll have more houses on the market, it's not going to work. That's my opinion personally. But we had we'll touch on migration a small amount, but yeah. And okay.
So this $3,500 per investment property land tax, that comes from the state or federal government?
No, that's from the land revenue, state revenue office.
Okay, so it's a state level thing.
It goes under the name of a COVID tax because of the lock, you know, everything else. They're not turning around saying the road works and everything else that they've overspent in. They're way over budget.
Well, look, okay, you know something? We have a couple of our own investment properties, and yes, they cost us money, right? But at the end of the day, you know, even though you don't buy an investment property for immediate gratification, all right? And
no, no, no. I
you know,
understand that.
It's long term. It's a long term investment, right? So
it
even
is.
though you're paying 3.5 grand, you're paying this, and a lot of those things are tax deductible, don't forget. So you know, even though you've paid $700 to go make sure that you know, your tenants aren't dying of carbon monoxide poisoning and burning to death,
got no problem with it in that regard.
You're still going to get some of that money back, right? And when you sell that house, you know, that's no doubt, you know, within about 15 kilometers of the center of town, and you probably bought, you know, 15 years ago for about an eighth of what it's worth now, you know, that whole annual fee kind of just, you know, shrinks into the background, you know. But look, having said that, nobody likes paying tax. I hate tax, especially with and I feel that our government and the way our country is run is, to a certain degree, very dishonest, right? We continually sell our resources. You know, I think the amount of, we pretty much get rid of all of our natural gas, okay? And they sell it back to us for like fucking, you know, three times what it's worth or something. And all these facts and figures, don't write into me going, oh, that's not accurate. Yeah, they're not accurate figures. It's only, you know, double of what we pay for it. Bullshit. Oh, I don't give a fuck. All right. The fact of the matter is that, you know, our government seems to look after everybody else first and us second. You know, we sell all of our land. We sell all of our resources, right? And we don't have a very trustworthy system that looks after its citizens, I don't feel. Now, I've got no problems with tax in its rawest form. When you cut it all down, you know, you look at socialist countries, you know, a lot of the Scandinavian countries, Norway, Finland, Sweden, Iceland, you know, all those countries that, you know, are very, very clever people, you know, they're paying ridiculous amounts of tax, like 55 cents or 60 cents in a dollar. But guess what? You know, they get free university, free education, free Medicare. They get free, you know, childcare. You know, you ask a new parent how much it costs to send their child to kindy. You know, they're paying $600, paying $600 a week. You know, there's some people who they actually stay home and quit their job because it's cheaper to forfeit their income than pay someone to look after their kid. You know. But then you go to Norway or Sweden, and they say, oh, hang on, we want to breed you know, a race of people who are clever and switched on and feel loved and that are happy. So we're going to give you all this shit for free. You know, look, I don't want to sound like a communist, but I don't want to sound like a communist, but if you have the right people steering the ship, socialism and communism can work. The trick is to find the right people to run it, because it doesn't take very much to have someone who is greedy at the helm and abuses the system. What do you think of that one? Drop the mic.
Ah, that's good. Oh, look, look, that's your opinion, and it's good. That's the whole why we like having these conversations, because it draws out. It draws out, I use the analogy of what you did with your CV joints, because you didn't know. It draws out looking at things differently and doing the homework and finding out how things actually work. Because when you start, I never worried about this sort of things when we were younger. We never did. But all of a sudden I'm against, I think it was Kerry Packer who says, you know, you'd have to have your head read if you don't want to doesn't know anyone who doesn't want to minimize their tax. And I understand what you said down the track. You know, yeah, it pays off, but you've got to remember, you've got to pay capital gains on that property that you sell. Like, I'm not looking at it, but it just seems like it's constantly you're paying for the shortcomings of governments that do certain things that they put it under the umbrella of, hence I said to you, we're using the COVID tax, right? Because we've got to gain back all the money that they put out. Instead of being blunt and saying, hey, look, we overspent. You and I live in this state. You know exactly how it works. You can see it. It's going to take a, and we are in debt, and that's okay. But all I'm saying is that it's, as someone in the middle of it, you pay when you buy it. You pay well, you got it. You pay after you sell it. And you just feel like sometimes that you're forever putting your hand in your pocket, so to speak. I've done the hard yards. I'm not here to pat myself on the back. You know better than me. Is, you know, growing up to people say, well, you know, oh, we're rich investments. No, we're not rich investors. I did three jobs to do what I had to do to get to where I had to, because I knew deep down that something had to shift. It was that bus that I was expecting coming, that bus that was supposed to arrive, that money bus was never coming. So you do the hard yards and you go, okay, with what the skills I've got, with what I know how to live my life, I've got to go forward and make myself some form of nest egg. But anyway, on that,
it's all personal preference as well, right? So
yeah, it is.
Look, I life wasn't always so good for me either. You know, like, yeah. I mean, I wasn't always getting paid what I'm getting paid. You know, like I did the job before I had this job. Well, besides, I went through, you know, the Qantas RTA, the Registered Training Organization of Qantas, and became an engineer. But after I left, I had a whole heap of really shit jobs, man. Like I got group certificates for like, you know, 45 grand and shit. Like I was cutting down trees and like, you know, overhauling fucking diesel, you know, diesel engines and stuff. And I hated it, you know. And it's only been in the last probably 12 years or something that I've actually sort of fallen on my feet. But look, I think that as a society, you know, I feel very privileged. I feel very privileged. I feel privileged not only because, you know, I am where I am, but I also feel privileged that I was given the opportunity to be able to get to where I am, regardless of how much effort I put in. Now, I don't give to charity. I do actually. I'm a very charitable person, but in an unconventional way. All right. I don't trust the I don't trust any of those big organizations. They will never get a cent out of me. Ever. Ever. But what I
is
do
that personal, is that through personal experience, or is it just a personal preference? Do you have
Well, I give to animal charities, but I give directly. Yeah. You know?
Okay.
All right. So I donate I think it's like $100 a month or something to the local animal shelter where I know it's directly going, because I actually put it into their account, right? I'm fairly certain, yeah, I mean, all the vets there get paid, but there are a lot of volunteers there. And I can go down there and I can actually see bags of dog food that I've paid for, you know? And animals don't, we don't, as a human race, we don't deserve domestic animals. You know, they give unconditional love, and you know, that's why I support them. As far as human charity, I will not give to any. I did do a bit of research a few years ago and found that, you know, there was a figure, and there was like a big report, you know, and it was a big hoo-ha for a few weeks. But if you give like, say, $100 to the actually, you know what, whoever it is, right? I probably shouldn't mention specific charities. But there are charities out there where if you give $100, you know, by the end of you know, by the time the bowl's passed around and the actual people that you're, you know, donating to, they only get like $25 or $30 or something ridiculous like that.
Okay.
So I stopped doing that. What I do instead, when I've got a bit of time, I'm in the city, I go and buy a whole heap of food, sandwiches from 7-Eleven, you know, and I hand them out to homeless people. You know, if there's someone in front of 7-Eleven, hey, you're hungry, you want a sandwich, you want an iced coffee, they fuck it, they love iced coffee. They love, they all they ever want is fucking what's that iced coffee? The break, Iceberg.
Dare or something like that. It's,
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know what it is about homeless people and iced coffee, but fuck, they love it. I was spent pretty much propping up propping up your iced coffee business. But yeah, so anyway, look, I can't remember how we got onto that, but look, if you are in the city, you see someone homeless, you think they might be hungry, don't look down on them, don't stare down your nose. They're humans too with feelings, they have problems that are great, much, much greater than yours. Buy them a sandwich, buy them an iced coffee, and always, always, always give to the animals.
I agree.
Okay. Oh boy, oh boy. I'm on a roll today. I feel fucking pretty
You
good.
are.
I feel pretty good. Yeah. You feel all right?
I'm feeling great. I feel fantastic. I had my morning was covered by we keep going down the house market. I spoke to a builder this morning. We spent a few hours talking to someone. That was quite interesting within itself. Did you have any topics, sir, that you wanted to touch on yourself? That's
Look, my okay. So, so the last couple of the last time we spoke, which I think was Friday, we did that quick sort of 10-minute clip. I would like to address something out of that real quick. To answer your question, unfortunately, I haven't had much time to prepare anything. I've had time to watch the news. I haven't had time to. Mate, I've been absolutely flat out with my parents and his fucking car. But look, one of the things I did want to address was I downplayed the importance of that racial comment that was made between the Roosters that was directed towards the Broncos player by a Roosters player. Okay,
Yes, the yes,
I was
you
umming and
didn't.
ahhing, I was scratching my head, I was neither here nor there, I was kind of that. You know what? I had to think about it, and I spoke to a few people, and my comments were based on the fact that I personally wouldn't be offended if someone called me a monkey, because it's one of those things where if you're disconnected from a situation, it doesn't offend you, okay? Like for instance, if you aren't Jewish, you wouldn't get. It wouldn't mean as much if someone made a Nazi joke. You know what I mean? Now, I'm not an Islander, or I'm not, or whoever, whatever, race or racial, profile these people fall into. So, if someone called me a monkey, I'd be like, oh yeah, whatever. Like it's obviously a go at my physical gait. However, what I will say is, if someone is offended by something, and it is a racial comment that is wrong, you should not make racial comments. If you do, you should be made to apologize. And if you're a public figure, you should be made to apologize publicly. You should be fined, and you should not, and you should face the consequences front on. It is not okay to call somebody a monkey unless it's my 4-year-old nephew and he's a cheeky monkey. So I'd just like to clear that up.
Okay, the guy copped 8 weeks.
Was it 8 or 13? Could have been 8.
He got 8 weeks. The guy from the that NRL game, the guy that knocked out Jai Simpkin from North Melbourne, got 8 weeks. I thought he would have got 13, to be honest with you. So they're obviously trying to stamp that out, and which is fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, look, you gotta protect the head. I think that in my years of playing contact sport, I actually do think that I've got a bit of brain damage, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah, I do. I mean, there was a point where I went to lunch with an ex-girlfriend. Oh, this is years ago. It would have been 6 years ago, I reckon. Just lunch. And I'd spent like two and a half or 3 years of my life with this woman. And there were points where I looked at her and I thought, what is your name again? Like, I couldn't remember her name. So, but I mean, it was a bit of a strange thing. But I used to get knocked out, knocked unconscious, roughly once every maybe once every year, once every 18 months, once every season, I was knocked unconscious, I reckon, or very nearly. So, yeah, you've got to protect the head.
The reality of it, Joel, with sport or contact sport, especially these days, the players are much bigger. The game is much faster. They have an obligation. It is a workplace. How they're going to stamp it out, I don't know. I personally think the AFL's got is going to have litigation in the next 15 to 20 years. They're trying to stamp out. They're trying to not stamp it out, but they're trying to do everything within their power to try and protect the players. But I think eventually, where the two sides are, where the two sides of the spectrum is with this is, okay, you want to split. It is a contact sport, okay? You know when you are getting into any of these sports, what it is involved and how it works. The biomechanics of it, all that that goes into it in the future. I think with the AFL, we're talking about the AFL for arguments because that's what we're touching on, is they will, I think they'll have like what's happening now. There's a lot of past players coming at them and players that are playing today. And I think they're preparing for that because somewhere along the line, it's only going to take some precedent that'll come out, and I think that the floodgates will open up, and it's look, you know better than me. It's great when you're young; you don't have any comprehension or any forethought of anything like that. But later on, being belted or being run into. And that happening constantly, it's got to have, I guess, it has to have some sort of repercussions on the brain, I guess.
Well, of course it does.
At the end of the day.
A concussion is essentially when your brain hits the inside of your cranium.
Yes.
You know? So, yes. Look, I think that, you know, you can, and I know that, you know, these exaggerated examples aren't, you know, accurate, but if you join the military and you're going to war, right, essentially that, you know, that war ground or whatever they call it, you know, it's all a bit wanky. That's your workplace, right? Now, you can't join the military and go into war and expect to not get shot. Like, you can't go and, you know, wear high-vis vests and shit and run around, you know, like that's your job. And to a certain degree, when you step onto a football field, you are knowingly taking that risk that you might get hit. You might suffer an injury. Now, I don't know if you watched last night's St Kilda and Collingwood match.
Yeah, I listened to a bit of it and watched it, yeah.
So there was a player, I can't remember what his name is. I don't really
follow. I used to play for North Melbourne. I can't remember his name.
Mason Wood? Mason something?
Mason Wood, that's him.
Mason
yes,
Wood.
Yes.
Okay, so he got knocked unconscious quite badly by friendly fire, right? Now, if that player who had have hit him was an opposition player, regardless of how intentional it was, he'd be looking at a very lengthy suspension. Because it was friendly fire. It wasn't even mentioned. They probably, I mean, the club might be able to sanction them if it was sort of seen as deliberate or it's, you know, caused a lot of damage. But because it's friendly fire, you know, I would hazard a guess and just say that, you know, it was just put down as a nasty accident. But that is, you know, I mean, regardless, when you step onto a football field, whether it be AFL or for me, you know, most recently rugby, you accept that you might, you know, be involved in an incident that will affect you physically. Now, I do think you know, perhaps maybe, you know, up until about 20 years ago or, you know, 25 years ago, maybe in the, you know, 90s and back, you know, the contracts were a little bit more sort of, you know, loosey-goosey and they weren't kind of put over by a, you know, gone over by a lawyer as closely. But I would dare say that all the contracts that are signed by players now would be, you know, would have kind of like a, do you accept the conditions of, you know, football and, you know, all the incidences and everything that comes with playing, you know, Australian rules football, NRL, or rugby union, or ice hockey, or whatever else, you know, to sort of, you know, put a little bit of a, a kind of like a disclaimer, on them. But yeah, that's kind of my views on that.
Yeah, do you mean like signing a waiver? So that's what you're trying to say.
Well,
Stick a
yeah, I
saver.
mean,
Well, I don't know if people are prepared to do that. Maybe they already do. I just, yeah. Look, it's one of the it's one of those areas. Then how far do we take it? Like you said, do we do it to the military? Do we do it for boxing? Do we do it for tennis? Do we do it for? We do it in our workplace. I mean, they try and mitigate. But we're talking football is a totally separate entity, of course, because you've got two big humans crashing into each other. So look, let's hopefully common sense somewhere along the line will come to the fore. I don't think even, I mean, helmets are not going to help. They can put them on, but better than me, that's not going to work.
well,
And at
look,
the
in
end of the
my
day, like
experience
you.
from wearing a helmet, and I never wore helmets playing rugby, a helmet is going to help with like a sharp hit, like a, but when it's a dull thud, like for instance, hit heading the ground, hit head hitting the ground, it's not going to do a great deal. It isn't like, I mean, if someone punched you in the head with a helmet on, because that's a fairly, the load is, sort of concentrated over the area of a fist. It'll probably sort of stop a little bit of a, but a head hitting the ground, it's not going to do fuck all, I don't think.
No, it's not. No, definitely not. Definitely
Anyway,
not.
hey, listen, Santo, let's wrap this particular subject up.
Sure will.
We'll start before we start on the next subject. You asked me what I wanted to talk about, and I would like to address the fucking kerfuffle that has surrounded this royal family photograph fucking
Oh,
saga.
wow. Yeah, let's
But we don't,
go.
oh mate, I just, anyway, look, what we'll do is I'll send you another
Take a
in
deep
my,
breath, have a glass of water.
I
Have a
can't have
glass of
another
water,
glass of
take a
water, I'm
break,
afraid I'll
and
have to
send
pee.
me, and we'll take a break, and we'll hook into the
And I also want to talk
royals.
about your subjects as
Quite
well,
like,
all right?
yeah, it's only a
So,
couple. It's okay.
yeah, I'll talk to you in a minute. Hello, Santo and his glass of water. Oh, it's not, it's
It's
Coke.
Coke Zero. Makes you
Coke
enjoying
Zero.
it.
What is there a is there a difference between, I mean, what's the idea of the, I mean, zero sugar, but I mean,
It's
what makes it
the I
sweet?
feel like doing an ad. It's no kilojoules, same taste. I was never a fan of it, but I do like something sweet once. I actually don't drink a lot of this stuff, but I do enjoy it if I get a sweet fix. And it's zero sugar, and it's got about whatever, I think it's 41 kilojoules, and that will do. Easy. It's got
Have
a nice taste to it.
you ever met someone who has been addicted to Coke or Coke Zero?
Oh, I've seen some people who have been addicted to Coke. Apparently, they've got, and actually, I'm going to write this down. In, I think it's Spain or Mexico, there is an epidemic of
That's
obesity.
Mexico.
I think it's Mexico because of the, excuse me, the amount of Coke that they drink. But I notice, I see it at work. Just quickly touch on it with some of the young people drink a hell of a lot of it. Anyway.
Well, I mean, in the Philippines as well. We're in the Philippines this time last year, I reckon. Maybe even a bit 13 months. Fuck, mate. The thing is with the Philippines is, right, it is one of the most beautiful. Well, first of all, Manila. And if any listeners are from Manila, fuck Manila off. Like, run a bulldozer through it. There's nothing there. It is fucking terrible. It
Why?
is fucked, mate. We went to Manila and I felt like fucking necking myself every moment of it. There's nothing
Oh,
there. Oh,
Jesus.
I hated it, mate. There are not many places that I can honestly say that, just have absolutely nothing going for it, but Manila is one of them. Having said that, there are some places within the Philippines that are absolutely gorgeous. But We went to this island, right? And it was the most idyllic island you can imagine. It was like something out of like the, a cigarette ad or something, like, Long Beach, the girl in the
Beautiful.
bikini
Yeah, I can
and
imagine.
walking white, blue sand, blue water and white sand and everything. So you'd think, oh, beautiful, seafood's going to be great. They come out, show you the menu. Oh yeah, you want a great big fish here? Yep. All they do is fucking deep fry it.
No.
Yep.
Ah, you killed
No. Yeah,
it.
deep fried and sugar drinks. But yeah, anyway, I hope you enjoy your Coke Zero.
Thank you.
No.
Now I feel guilty. I feel
No,
really guilty. Oh
no.
God.
Yeah, so
The voice is in your head again, Joel.
no, I'm trying to work out whose dog's barking. It gives me the shits, like, because we've got two, but the neighbors have three. There's one over this side, one over that side, and everyone has a dog. And normally, when one of them goes, they all go. It's like orchestral symphony of dogginess. Yeah. Anyway, so Santo, what was one of the things that you wanted to? What sort of conversation did you want to open up?
Oh, the Grand Prix's in town. Are you a Grand Prix? Is it Grand Prix or Grand Prix? What are you? What's the Grand Prix, I guess, in Melbourne? Have you been? I
I've been a few
went, you
times.
have been? I went once when I used to work for Patrick's, Patrick Stevedoring, but I worked the Patrick's Auto Care and I looked after the fleet of trucks that used to deliver the cars around Australia. And I went with Kenworth and Mack Australia. We had a box there. And you know what? I preferred the supercars that came
Really?
on. I preferred that. It was, I wouldn't go. I mean, would I go out of my way to go and see it now? No. But I did prefer the supercars. The Grand Prix itself, I think, look, they need to change things up. I think they did. Do you watch much? Do you watch a lot of it?
I watch MotoGP. I'm a big fan
You watch
of
MotoGP. Yeah, all right. So that's pretty, I mean, it's close. But the Grand Prix now, if it's not Sebastian, is it Sebastian Vettel? Is it? Is it
Yeah, you're a
he
few years
the
behind, Santo. You're a few years
is it
behind,
him?
mate.
No, the No, sorry, not Sebastian, but the English, the young man from England who drives for Mercedes is going to go to Ferrari, which is
Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton, and there's someone else. So what I find is basically they start off, you've got the two front runners, and then that's it. That's the race is over. And I find it, unless God forbid something severe happens, it's just a boring. It's just a boring race, sorry. It is.
Okay.
It's just the two that are out, maybe two or three teams, and that's it. And I think they should have what is that? Is it DRI? I could be
DRS,
talking out my
yeah.
ass. DRS that opens up the wing at the back or get a bit more drag or whatever it is. And they've got to bring it back to competitive. I used to watch it in the 90s, 80s and 90s when you had, Mansell and all these guys, but I just find it boring. I really do. Sorry. That's my
No,
opinion. The
I.
standard of the V10s and the V12s and those guys and the Ferraris used to scream around.
No,
But
I agree.
I just find it's just as boring as batshit. I'd rather go and maybe take in the food, the atmosphere and everything else. But apart from that, God, I'm going to sound misogynistic here. They took away the green girls, things like that. And, yeah, that's my opinion. I think it's good for Melbourne. It brings money in, but bring back the celebrity race. Bring back just some more excitement into the actual Grand Prix itself. Ever since the German the Schumacher, unfortunately, what happened to him up until then. But I find it just a, it's horrible to say. I probably would rather play a round of golf.
Yeah,
That's saying
I do
something.
that as
I think it
well.
was Ernest. I think Ernest Hemingway said, golf is a good, Ernest Hemingway, I think, said, golf is a good walk wasted.
Yeah, that Yeah, I would agree with that. No, so I not only do I enjoy Formula One, but I also do play golf. My favorite is MotoGP. I've been following MotoGP for probably 15 years, and I've had a video pass to MotoGP and watching it on television for probably about 8 to 10 years. Now, if you do want to watch exciting, gripping, competitive racing, MotoGP is the only place that you can see it. Formula One has become way too, they're all wrapped in cotton wool,
Sanitized.
sanitized.
Yeah,
No,
sanitized.
nobody wants to see anyone get hurt. But at the end of the day, as we spoke
No.
about the AFL, you get into that car, you get paid your millions and millions of dollars, and you accept the risks, or you don't drive at all. Because at the moment, all they have is 22 or 24 or 18 or whatever, racing drivers there are, driving around the circuit, too afraid to do anything in case they get, a penalty or sanction or anything, And it happened in the MotoGP with Marc Marquez, right? I mean, and it wasn't
Yes.
because the MotoGP is sanitized or anything. MotoGP is good, proper, raw, exciting racing. But he was too good. Marc Marquez was too good. He was like, Lewis Hamilton, what Max Verstappen is now for Formula One. Marc
Max
Marquez,
Verstappen, this is.
Max Verstappen is the top dog at the moment. Before that, it was Lewis Hamilton. Before that, it was what, Vettel. But anyway, look, I follow motorcycle racing a lot closer. And all that used to happen with Marc Marquez was, if he was on pole, by about halfway through the first lap, he would have about a 3 second lead. And then by the fifth lap, he'd be half a lap in front of everyone else. And that would be it. You'd be watching it for second. I'm going to go out and say it. The best thing to happen to MotoGP was Marc Marquez falling off his bike and breaking his leg, or his arm, I think it was his arm or his leg, because it wiped him out for the season and a half. And it gave the rest of the field an opportunity to be more competitive, and it was more exciting racing. And then he came back. The Honda that he was put on was just about unridable. And Marc Marquez, I think between Marc Marquez and his teammate Joan Mir, who was a world champion in 2020, they had 50 accidents, 50 crashes throughout last season. 50 between the two of them, I don't think Marc Marquez, got a podium, and I don't think he went through a session without stacking. It was incredible stats. And this is coming from a guy who was unbeatable in about, for about 6 years. So, anyway, get on to MotoGP, and we will talk about that KO subscription after the show.
Just quickly on just what I'm saying on that, because I used to have the Italian rider, the doctor, what's his name?
Valentino
He was another one.
Rossi.
Wolf. He was a natural. I must just quickly touch on it. When I do watch it, you guys, or even the motor, especially the 500s, and absolute effing lunatics to be going that quick on a piece of machinery, like, until you see it. And for people who don't follow it, my hat off to them. Just the pure, that is courage on another level. And it's just, I think you've got to be wired a certain way. And the other one that I watched, I started watching bits and pieces, and you'll understand the race, the who, oh my God, that is, you guys are fucked,
The Isle of Man.
is the Isle of Man. That is insane.
Yeah,
That
TT
is a
racing.
race. That's the, I get goosebumps. I've watched it. You people are nuts. That
Yeah.
is, that is it. That is, and I hats off to them. I wish I'd an answer that sort of. I'd rather get into a blue with Mike Tyson or you and throw punches than getting on one of those things and do what they do, because they've had a few, they've had a crap load of deaths in that race,
You're
haven't they, too?
the same age as Mike Tyson. You should fight him. You remember that time that you wanted to fight
Oh,
Novak
don't bring
Djokovic?
on. Now that you've touched on that, you've heard about the most recent he's fighting again.
I
We'll
have, I
touch
have.
on
Look,
that.
okay, so just the last thing on this subject, because I do want you brought up a very, very interesting, or you sent me an interesting text message beforehand that I really want to get onto.
Yep.
I actually had to sell my motorcycle because I was one of those guys,
Oh,
except I
shit.
wasn't as talented as those guys. And I was afraid that my talent was going to run out, and I was going to have a very, very close brush with the scenery. So I actually got rid of my bike, but I was quite a capable motorcycle rider. I used to do a
I
lot of
remember you.
experimentation, and yeah, I mean, yeah, it's dangerous, particularly on public roads, which is where I used to ride them. And I've done some terrible things on motorcycles.
I can
So.
imagine, Eric. I can just quick FYI, we're on that. I used to, I many, 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 many moons ago. In another life, I met Mr. McDoon a couple of times in his younger days. I used to work with his wife, Selena. So, but he was he had an amazing. I liked Mr. Doon because he had a really nice nature to him. Like he wasn't aggressive or anything, and it suited him. But what I'm hearing, his son's an accomplished Formula One driver in the future. Apparently, he's might be getting a might be getting a gig. I'm
Yep, so
hearing.
Formula 3, I think he is. Formula 3 or Formula
Yes.
2. But we also have
Yep.
another one, Remy Gardner, who was in MotoGP and
Oh
the
God.
son of
Okay.
Wayne Gardner,
Wayne.
who Wayne Gardner was I think he was a world champion a couple of times, and then he went to supercars,
Yeah.
and then
He
he
brought the
retired.
Coca-Cola. He brought the Coke team. I remember.
Yeah,
Remember.
something like that. So
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Remy Gardner came second or something in the Moto2, got a gig with Factory KTM or the second
Oh yeah.
KTM
Yep,
team
yep.
last year. Didn't do much good, but now he's in the I think it's the World Superbikes or the Australian Superbikes. So
Okay.
Remy Gardner, sorry it didn't work out, bud. But we've had all sorts of people come back and make their second run, and I'm sure whatever you're doing, you're having fun and making good money. So
Good luck to him
anyway,
and power to him.
so Santo, one of the
Yes.
subjects that you wanted to bring up was immigration. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We had just quickly, I'll touch on it. My there's it would be a concern because it's come up again in regards to it touches on what we were talking about in regards to the homes and because we're still in Melbourne, we're in a shortage of homes in Australia. We had 740,000 last year, and they said they were going to cap it. This is my parents come from overseas, and we've touched on that before.
Okay, so just a disclaimer, you are an immigrant.
No, my parents were. I was born here. I'm more Australian than you'll ever be. I'm only 63.
Okay,
Yes,
so
so
your
it's
parents were born in Italy, so
yes,
they're immigrants.
they came in the 40s.
Okay.
So we had, I think it was last year, it was about 740,000 immigrants come in. And my concern is, and I think it's really starting to bubble up. It's starting to come up, and more people are starting to re not more people. The powers that be, and where what I'm trying to say is, where are we going to put these people? And last month's figures, I think it was for February leading into March, and now we're going to cap it. We've had another 50,000 come in. That's a crap load of people, right? I've got no problem with we need workers, we need every we need all this, that's whatever they want to do in this country. But I think,
Where'd your
and
parents
I
go?
don't, but sorry,
Where'd your parents go when they immigrated to Australia?
they lived with relatives in Flemington.
Well, I guess that's just where the immigrants love to go today as well.
But when you've got Australians that can't find a house and can't find rent, where are you going to put, where are the roads, where's the infrastructure? That's all I'm touching on. I've got where are we going to put all these people? Because if they keep bringing more and more people into this country, We don't. I think they're looking at, I think they want to build 800,000 homes in the next 20 years or something like that. We're nowhere near it. We're not even touching the surface at the moment.
Well, I'm just right. Like my first thought is, are you criticizing the immigrants or are you criticizing the government and their lack of foresight into working out where
the
all
lack
these
of
people?
Foresight of bringing this in. I've got nothing against the immigrants coming into the country.
I've okay,
no
good. I'm glad
we
cleared that up.
I saw no. My parents, like I said to you, I remember going back to see where my father was born and my mother was born, and it literally was, it was almost a dirt floor. I was surprised.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not my thing is my, my issue is where are we putting all these people?
So you've got to remember as well. So a lot of homeless. So, and this is something I've actually interacted with the homeless community quite a bit, you know, through, as we spoke about earlier, you know, buying them food and iced coffee. And, you know, you get to know a few of them a little bit. Oh, look, I was going to take all these jumpers to the op shop. Would you like a jumper? Yeah, sure. No problems. You know, give them, you know, the stuff that I'd take to the op shop, right? A lot of these, the homeless community is enormous. Is enormous. It's an actual community. Yeah, it's a social group. Okay.
Yep.
A lot of them do it by choice.
Yes.
You know, it's all they know, and they want to be there because it's their life choice. There's a lot of mental health issues. There are a lot of drug issues and things like that. And you know, I mean, they obviously need support. You know, they need support. That's you know, they're forced to commit crime because you know they need resources, you know, whether it be drugs, food, water, you know, whatever it's, okay. Where was I going with that? Fuck, I've lost my train of thought.
Sorry about that.
No, yeah, okay. So look, anyway, a lot of you know the homeless people in Australia, it's a completely separate issue because there are a lot of you know, people are there by choice, you know, and the people that aren't, it's mental health issues. And as I said, they need support. The people that are immigrants, you know, they're migrating to Australia. Yeah, I completely agree. You know, we have to, as a community, be able to support these people, you know, with housing and to establish their new lives in our country. Because at the end of the day, every single person, unless you are a First Nations person, is an immigrant. I'm an immigrant. My grandfather, my grandmother, you know, I'm an immigrant. You're an immigrant. You know, I've got roots in England, Scotland, Ireland. I've got roots in Russia, Lithuania. You know, I think my great grandfather or great great grandfather got on a boat from, you know, wherever, and they just sailed around the world and they landed in Cape Town and said, right, who wants to get off? And the people that went, oh, this is all right, chucked off. You know, the people that, you know, they stopped in New York. Who wants to live in New York? Yeah, me. They jumped off. And that, you know, we just need to be able to, and it comes down to, as we said, the government being able to support the people who are new to this country, because at the end of the day, every single human being on this planet deserves to live a happy life and have everything that they need. They have a right to that. And if we can give that to them, I don't see why we shouldn't be able to. Having said that, if we can't support them, you know, we should probably reassess how many people, you know, we can have in this country. But I do think that, yeah, if we have a look at some of the bullshit that our governments do, you know, all these torn up contracts for the fucking East Link or whatever it was, you know, the East West fucking freeway. And, you know, I mean, it was billions on that, you know, like the COVID thing. I don't know what, you know, I mean, every couple of months, you know, they rip up a contract worth, you know, so $1 million in data. And you just think, well, there you go. You know, there's $10 million, half a million, you know, that's 20, you know, yeah, that's so many, you know, council houses, council flats. That's, you know, you could help people with that shit, you know. But there's no doubt that migration And cultural diversity in this country is what makes this country so beautiful, and I encourage it. What
I
about you,
agree.
Santo?
Look, I agree to a point, but then I understand that the gov you were saying that the government has to make them feel welcome and welcome, sorry, and support. But how far do you go with the support as well, though, Joel? Where does it go? Where do you get to a point where if I've got to, if people are coming into this country, right? Let's exclude genuine people who are coming from countries that are war torn and looking for what's the word for it? Asylum. Genuine refugees who come in bad, maybe might be a wrong choice of word, without illegally. They should be supported and looked after to a point. But the ones coming in, knowing that the amount of support that is given by the government, right, that comes out of our taxpayers' money, right, you and me and all the other Australians, it comes to a point that if you're coming in, I'm sorry, but this might sound a bad choice of words, you want to get some sort of return on your investment as well, if that makes sense. If you're coming to this country for a better life, and I say that because, and I use always my parents as an example, who literally did come with one suitcase. No support, no nothing. They just worked. But today they've got a lot of support and they're very well known. And I don't have the facts or the figures to say that part of why all this immigration is coming in as well, that the government is definitely getting a crap load of money from these people as well for coming into the country. That's my own personal opinion, but I don't have anything to back it up. But all I'm saying is let them in if you want to let them in, not a problem. These people need to go somewhere. These people need to live. They need to give back. There needs to be jobs. There needs to be all these things that need to fall into place. I've got no, yeah, I'll open up my arms. Let's open up our arms and sing Kumbaya. That's great. But when it becomes a burden on the system, which I don't know whether it does or it doesn't, I go back to my initial, where are we putting all these people? Because I personally, and what I'm seeing and the way things are going in the housing market, because it's the housing market's going to shoot through the roof. I'm telling within the next 5 to 10 years, where are we going to put all these people? Where are these houses all going to be built? Who's going to build them? Do you understand what I'm saying, what I'm trying to say to you? So that it's rob Peter to save Paul.
Well, that's yeah, that I mean that is right. Look, at the end of the day, the for somebody to look, me personally, I think the best thing that you can do for somebody is to offer them education and healthcare. That is the best
Not
way to get
disagreement.
somebody well on their way. But you got to remember, some of these people, right? I mean, we're going to start getting. We've had people from South Sudan, they come here, mate. 3 months ago, they were under threat of being murdered by militants and this civil war. No doubt we're going to get people from Palestine and Gaza who,
That's what I said earlier on. Excluding those people, I've got no problem with that. They're coming from a war-torn country. I've got no dramas having asylum for people. I'm talking about the people who are coming in to make a new life, and there's the handouts. They all get helped out eventually. Something you need to house them. They need to find jobs and to give back to the actual communities that they live in.
So can you? I'm trying to work out where these people are coming from. Are they just like people who were like living in, say, living in, say, South Africa, and they had jobs and they had little houses and stuff, and they just went, let's come to Australia, and they just
For a better life, yes, yeah.
and just left there. Well, I mean, you can safely assume that they're the people who come over here and go, okay, look, you know what? I was living in a one bedroom. Apartment in Cape Town. I was a garbage collector over there. What can I do there? I've got experience with truck driving. I've got experience in garbage collecting, and I mean, they're people who are low income earners and people who do have to climb the ladder. But when people generally complain about, immigrants. They're complaining about the people who, you would typically see, or stare, hanging around train stations and mugging people and running amok, and those people are generally people who are from, countries that are in absolute turmoil. And as I said to you, if those people were offered support, education, welfare, housing,
They've got all that.
medicine.
You're in Australia. They've actually got all that. You can't say that they don't have it because it's there. It's there. At the end of the day, you can offer out. It's the old adage, you can take the horse to water where he either drinks or he doesn't. There's plenty of support in Australia. You know that better than me, Joel. And it's not. I'm not. Maybe you're misunderstanding. Let me be really, 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 really clear about it. It's not the migration. Bring you want to come here, come. I've got no problem with that. What I'm saying is, where are we putting these people? I believe we have a housing crisis. And the cost of living and everything else that's going on. I'm slowly seeing it. And I think within 5 years, we're going to see more homeless than you've ever seen before. People are struggling. People are
Well,
extremely, and
not
I'm
so
not
much
talking
me,
about these people that come in. Well, I'm
but
talking about Australians. I'm talking about Australians who have been living here. And when I see governments, i.e., Mr. Albanese, trying to be everything to everybody, spending $500,000, $500 million on a referendum, and all the other crap that they spend it on, okay? All right. When they just keep throwing money at things instead of addressing the real issues that need to be done in this
okay.
country.
Well, look, I mean, I
Okay.
guess as well. Okay, so, and I actually, I've had this analogy for a while, right? So, we as
You
okay,
spoke about
so,
it, you just said it before about all these roads and everything, the billions of dollars that they spend.
well, and
We go
yes,
back
that, I
to
mean,
what you
that can
said.
definitely be better spent, right? But okay, so I put, and this is an analogy that can be applied very, very broadly, okay? If you go into any First Nations communities in in these remote communities, right?
I used to
They
deliver
have,
their just deliver their goods in Central Australia. Yes.
yes. So you would know that, you're right. We have given all of these people support, right? But we have given them the support that we as white Caucasian people think that they need, okay?
What's the answer?
Well, okay, so let me just go into it a little bit further, right? It'd be the equivalent of, say, a First Nations person, coming up to you and saying, "Right, Santo, you've decided to come and live in a remote community with me. Listen, here's a spear. Here's a spear. Here's two sticks and some bark. Okay. Go out there's plenty of food. You've got snakes, you've got yams, you've got all these roots, and I mean, there's water over there if you dig down a bit." And you're sitting there going, "Well, fuck, hang on. You've given me the support, you've given me the tools, and you've said that there's all this shit over here that that will sustain life, but these aren't the tools I'm familiar with. These aren't the tools that I need to live, and it's the same with everybody else. It's the same with everybody else. We have made mistakes over and over again as white people going into remote communities and saying, "There's a school. Go and learn in that school." That's not what they want to do, mate. It's, their life was different. We can't expect them to completely assimilate to our way of life as we tell them to. We need to go in. We have to get strong representatives of each community, of every facet of life that is in Australia, and say, "You need to find out what your people need to live a sustainable and fulfilling life for them." So, for instance, and I do go back to the Sudanese community because there are, we drive trains we see a lot of problems with the Sudanese. Even though they do have plenty of resources, there is obviously something there that they need more, and I have a feeling that it might be community leaders.
But you're only
Perhaps.
seeing, but there are community leaders in the Sudanese industry, like Sudanese industry,
in the Sudanese community, in the ones that you do see, they're young kids. I still remember, you might be too young. It happened even in the Vietnamese community.
Oh, mate, here's the crazy thing, mate. You always
it
go
happens
on about...
right across the board.
You always go on about, oh, you know, my parents came in the 40s and they were, you know, called, you know, this, they were called that. Yeah, and then, you know, so the Italians were persecuted, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, right? Yeah, then the Vietnamese, you know, there was an influx of Vietnamese coming in after the Vietnam War, 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, you had fuckheads like Pauline Hanson. That's right, Pauline. If you ever are listening to this, you are a fuckhead, okay? Get up in Parliament and say that she fears that we are being overrun by Asians, you know? Then, you know, there's been, I remember when I was a kid, there were a lot of Lebanese immigrants, you know, and then we sort of went into now the Sudanese community. But what I'm saying is this, right? Italians and Greeks and all of these people, they are so integral to our community. They're so important. They play such a large role in what we do. The Vietnamese, you know, they play such a large part. Yeah, and I've got no doubt that over time, that each one of these social groups, you know, find their feet, they get more comfortable, you know, shit settles down in their country at home, and you know, that they will become valuable, and they are already valuable contributors to the society. It's just that there are always some, you know, rotten tomatoes.
But you're going to get that in every culture, Joel. You know that. Exactly. It happens right across the board, and eventually, yeah, it will calm down. But growing up in the 70s and 80s, there was a little bit more respect for authority as well. There was much more respect for authority and for families. My father used to just have to look at me sideways. Today, it's a different. I'm advocating violence. No, not saying that at all. So you go back to something you just touched on briefly with community leaders, and there are a lot of Sudanese community leaders around that do try and help. You've got to remember, it's just a small group of dickheads. Mm. That's all it is at the end of the day. But going back to what I was touching on earlier on with the migration, that's all I'm saying. Where are we putting these people and what are they going to do and where are we going to house them?
Yeah. Well,
and I think it's the same thing, the same passion that we touched on briefly with the Aboriginal communities. Use the same thing that what's going on in Australia as well. It's going back into housing and going back into so many other areas of Australia that I think should be more addressed.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm half American. My mother's a full-blooded American, and she comes from the Southwest. Well, she doesn't actually come from the Southwest, but she, you know, spent a lot of her time in the Southwest. You know, around Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah, where there's a lot of Native American Indians. You know, they've managed, and this job still isn't done. You know, they've managed to, you know, support the Native American Indians in their communities, and they have reservations and police forces and all the rest of it. You know, the New Zealanders and the Maoris, you know, they've done such a better job. We are so behind when it comes to this, you know, this kind of community support. But anyway, look, Santo,
I think the whole thing's, when it comes to the Aboriginal communities and the culture, I think it's been mismanaged entirely. It's been mismanaged in a major way.
Yep, I agree, and I think that, you know,
they just keep throwing money at it, thinking they're going to fix it.
And that's right. Like, you can't just throw money at something and just expect it to fix itself. You've got to make changes. You've got to make sacrifices. You have to, you know, you have to make an effort. And that's exactly right. You can't throw money at something and expect it to get better. But anyway, Santo, we have. Oh, mate, and this always happens, but it's a good thing. It's a good thing, mate. Yes. This is what we're here for, right? I wanted to talk about that fucking stupid photograph that was taken and augmented.
All right, well,
fucked around with.
Do you want to do a quick? Do you want to stop? You maybe half this. Anyway, how about we stop this? It's up to you.
Oh, we can't, mate. We can't have an hour and a half podcast with two people talking shit.
I reckon just break it up. Anyway,
Okay, so what we'll do is this is episode number whatever it is. I'm going to start numbering them on the thing. I'm also going to experiment with this one and run it through an AI program to cut out all the ums and ahs and all the other shit. And it'll also, you know, level up a few of the audio discrepancies. But that will be all done on my end. This it is now Friday. I'm going to have this released on Monday. To all of our listeners out there, have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. Watch plenty of sport. Be lovely to each other. Be kind and be open-minded. And if you have any queries or questions or contributions, at the moment, it's joelcarpen@gmail.com. But we are going to have another meeting in just a moment about our socials and how you can easily contact both of us. So, Santo, you just hang in there.
And give us a good kicking as well. Play into us and be abusive, most probably. Call us racist and horrible human beings, which we'll probably get told.
Yep. No, we want to hear it all. We need fuel. We need fuel.
No violence. No dick pics, please.
No dick pics. No threats of violence.
Be civil. Yep. Be civil. We love good conversation. And we're always open to learning more.
Absolutely. All right. I'm just going to stop this recording. Thank you so much, Santo, for the time. And we're going to have a little chat after we hang up. All right.
I hate our little chats. He abuses me. He gets very.